This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Couple rounds into the NCAA tournament. St. John's, unfortunately, lost. UConn lost a close one today to Florida. The Big East is out. To talk about the tournament and some of the Big East teams and what happens next, we bring in Zach Braziller from the New York Post. Hey, Zach, how are you?
How you doing, Lori?
I'm doing just fine, thanks. All right, so St. John's versus Arkansas. Rick Pitino versus John Calipari. And you know, I thought maybe it would be one of those typical St. John's games where they then turn it on in the second half. You know, tough defense, lowest scoring, all of that. And then what happened there? And R.J. Lewis and, you know, Kadari Richmond and the foul trouble and all of it. But how can you explain what happened in this game, and was it just an off night? Did Pitino get out coached? Like, what happened in this game?
Yeah, I think there isn't necessarily one thing. I think number one, Arkansas is a bad matchup. You know, going to a tournament, you know, people said, well, like, they run into a team that hits a ton of threes, the problem. No, I thought the team that could give them problems is a really big athletic team that could nullify some of their strength. And that's what Arkansas is. They're really athletic. They're big. They're long. And they kind of nullified a lot of St. John's strengths, which is getting into the lane, finishing around the basket, and a night where they really struggled shooting the ball. Now, they also had a really bad night. Kadari Richmond was barely on the court. Foul trouble, fouled out 16 minutes. He's, you know, such a key part of what they do. R.J. Lewis had a nightmare of a game, 3 of 17 from the field. They didn't shoot well. You know, and Arkansas is good. Like, they started poorly. They had a completely new team. They were 0-5 in the SEC at one point. Since then, they're 11-6. And 5 of those 6 losses were single digits to tournament teams. They're a good team. I mean, they almost beat Alabama. They played a lot of, you know, they won at Kentucky. They're a good team. They're not, this isn't like a typical 10. You know, they're, I watched a lot of this tournament this weekend. They're better than basically a ton of 6, 7, 8, 9 seeds. So I think it was running into a team playing really well, a team that gave them matchup problems, and also a game where they just had a bad day, you know, and that's all it takes in March, is one bad day.
What did you think of that foul, that last foul in Kadari Richmond where he fouled out? Was that a foul? Was that a good call, or is that a bad call there?
I mean, I thought it was a bad call. I thought the officials were really bad for both sides. I mean, the Arkansas big guys had foul trouble. Vissick fouled out. Mm-hmm. Adu was in foul trouble the whole game. I would have liked to see the best players all play 30 minutes instead of what we saw, which was, you know, a lot of foul trouble. Wiltshire barely played in the first half. He was limited in minutes as well. Yeah. It was a bad call, no question about that. But I thought they were bad both ways. I thought there were a lot of makeup calls, a lot of questionable calls. it was a poorly officiated game. I don't think there's any question about that.
And then in terms of RJ Lewis, and obviously people talking about Pitino taking him out, he shot 3 for 17. And I think in the possession before he gets taken out of the game with 5 minutes left, you know, 4:56 left, essentially, you know, benching the Big East player of the year for the biggest spot of the season with the season on the line. And I, you know, he definitely, RJ Lewis in that possession before he gets taken out clearly is forcing the ball, kind of throwing something right up wildly. And what I expected to happen in that situation, and I was looking for it on the sideline there, is for him to be taken out for a coach to talk to him and basically say, put him back in 30 seconds later and say, every possession has to run through Zuby between now and the end of the game. Like, at some point, I expected them to say that, and that didn't happen. And so, I guess, were you surprised that RJ Lewis, Big East Player of the Year, was taken out with almost 5 minutes left in the game with the season on the line and not put back in at some point?
I think that play was more a culmination of the game. You know, as talented as RJ is, he's had in the past bad habits of, you know, forcing the issue. And, you know, he's such a good athlete. He was able to get by sometimes with bad athleticism. And he faced a team where he couldn't do that and his shot wasn't falling. And, you know, he fell in some bad habits. And he just, you know, there's one clip of Zuby trying to kind of get his head into the right game at one point. And, yep, you know, I can see both ways. And I also think nobody spends more time with these guys than with Pitino. He's an all-time great coach. And he thought their best chance that RJ was just, it was not going to find it. I think if you watch that whole game, you probably would come to the same conclusion. Now, they weren't going to, with Kadari Richard fouled out, they weren't going to win the game with RJ on the bench. And you know, at that point, they probably weren't going to win the game with him in. To me, they lost that game at the end of the first half. They start poorly. They're down 8. They come back. They take a 4-point lead with 3 minutes left.
Yep.
And I felt like they were in a good spot. And then Arkansas reels off 7 straight points.
Yep.
Second half, Arkansas takes control. I thought that's really where they lost that game. Mm-hmm. But they had a real chance to kind of take command. And that, to me, is where that game was lost.
Yeah, it did feel like the momentum. And we're used to seeing, especially at the beginning of the third quarter, that they come out and you know, such a strong second half team. And instead, it was Arkansas building there. But I'm curious how you also thought Rick Pitino handled the post-game press conference when he was asked some of the questions and about benching RJ Lewis. And he said, "You're asking me leading questions. You already know the answer." He seemed a bit defensive there. Were you surprised for somebody who is as experienced as he is with how he came across there?
But he hates to lose. It's been established. He's gotten this team to hate to lose. And in the moment, he didn't want to hammer his guy. Could have handled a little better. Yeah. But, you know, I was not upset or, you know, taken aback. It's just, he was upset. It's really raw. It's right after the game. And I also want to mention too, that I thought RJ Lewis handled his post game incredibly well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He answered every question. He was really good. He didn't blame coach. He didn't blame, you know, he put it on himself. He said he was a bad leader. He said he'd let his teammates down. And this isn't the pros where these guys, after every game, it's not an open locker room. They do press conferences. It's not like he's got a lot of these people are talking to he's never even met before or seen before. And they got microphones and cameras in his face asking really tough questions. And, you know, I thought that was a real sign of maturity. And I was impressed with how well. I think that's one thing that should not be forgotten. You know, yes, these guys are making money now and all that, but they're still kids. You know, they're still young men. And I was really impressed with how he handled some really tough questions. And look, I know St. John's fans are upset and they don't want to hear that. But for me, I was impressed with how he handled it.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omicid, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at omicid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's a great point, is that I think there's a tendency to minimize how difficult that is. And
yeah, especially if, you know, it's not the pros where, like, where they get used to it. And every game they have people in their face. This is very different, you know. And so I think he should be commended for how well he dealt with that. And it's a learning lesson. It's like, you know, it's something he's going to learn from, whether he's back here, whether he's in the pros next year. You know, he's probably going to test the draft waters, and we'll see where he goes from here. But I don't think that should be forgotten, that he handled it. He handled that very, very well.
Sounds like the, you know, typical thing here is that he will go pro if he hears that he will be a first round pick. And if not, then maybe he comes back for college. Anything to, you know, that game and his performance or how he felt about it or any of that, anything with the tournament that you think influences whether he goes pro or not?
No, I mean, I think you're right. Like, if he's going to be a first-round pick, he's going to go. And, you know, most mocks don't have him, you know, anywhere higher than really middle second round. I talked to a scout today who thinks he would be more of a two-way type guy, you know, and coming back to school, he'd probably make more money. So I think there's a good chance he's back. That's something we're going to know for a while. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see kind of what happens with him, how they handle the offseason. It sounds like Zubi Ejiofor will be back. Some of their other contributing, like, lesser role players will be back. They're going to hit the portal hard, try to bring in some good players. I can see a scenario where they're a more complete team next year. You know, this year they were just so good defensively and so tough and gritty, but they obviously had shooting shortcomings and some offensive shortcomings. But I can see them being more of a complete team. And I think Zubi Ejiofor has a chance to be one of the best players in the country next year.
And he's certainly nothing to hang his head about. He was terrific when, you know, his everybody else around was not. He really stepped up. So we're, you know, that's obviously St. John's. Today there was UConn versus Florida, and for a UConn team where a lot of this season has been underwhelming and it's hard, you're a 2-time defending national champion. I thought in what has been a tournament so far that at times has been underwhelming, a lot of the games haven't been as interesting or fun, I thought UConn Florida was a fantastic basketball game. What are your, you know, kind of thoughts on that game and UConn and how the season after that game sort of, what does it say, how does it sort of put a cap on the run of the last few years and the season for that team?
Yeah, I was riveted. That was a absolutely fantastic game. I was stunned. I think the line was 9.5. I thought Florida would cover that. Florida's a popular pick to win it all. Yep. They're terrific. UConn played a whale of a game. They had Florida tight. If Walter Clayton doesn't just go nuclear in the last 5 minutes, that's they win. You know, it's funny. I'm in a chat with a bunch of St. John's fans I've gotten over the years, and you know they're all rooting against UConn. And then when Clayton goes nuts, they're like, not exactly thrilled because, you know, if you remember, he played at Fortino, and a lot of people thought he was an Iona guy.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of people thought he would come here with Danis Jenkins, who was St. John's star last year, and he ended up going home to Florida. He grew up about an hour or so away from Gainesville, and he had an amazing year. He was a first-team All-American, and he was absolutely awesome today, you know, in a game where it looked like his team was in major trouble. But yeah, UConn really showed you the heart of a champion today. I don't think there's any question about that. They played over their heads today, and it was really a fitting end to what's been a great run for them. And look, I expect them to be better next year, and they have some really good high school players coming in. I'm sure they'll get some good transfers. But yeah, they really played well. No question about that. I thought they were going to win the game. But, you know, for about 35 minutes, they were in complete control. And then Clayton just made great, great plays. I mean, kind of, he made shots that were undefensible. You know, shots on the run, guy right on him. You know, a shot that, you know, it's kind of almost impossible to stop.
Yeah, I thought that Clayton made himself money today. Like, being able to make those types of shots in that situation, that well guarded, and have that level of strength, I think, are the kinds of things that turn him into a first-round draft pick, where previously I've been seeing him in mocks in the second round or whatever. I don't know how he doesn't now become a first-round draft pick when you watch that.
And you know what the thing is? That's something that, you know, if you're RJ Lewis, you could follow, because Clayton was a guy who had a really good year last year. You know, Florida didn't go that far in the tournament, and he tested the draft waters and was going to be a mid to, you know, second round pick. And he came back and he's had an incredible year. And, you know, maybe that's kind of could be a good example for RJ Lewis. But like, there are certain things that Clayton had to work on to really, you know, to elevate his play. And so maybe that's something that RJ kind of looks at.
Talking to Zach Braziller about the tournament, the men's tournament, and what are your overall thoughts about the Big East? Five teams in and now five teams gone. Nobody is alive in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, I mean, it was a down year. I don't think there's any question about that. I expected more from Creighton. I mean, not from Creighton. I thought Creighton did well. The Auburn game. I expected more from Marquette. I was disappointed with Xavier. I thought Xavier would play Illinois tougher after getting through the first four. Obviously, St. John's, you thought, would be a Sweet 16 team when you're a two seed. You know, the league's, you know, there's been rumblings about potential. You know, different people are saying, well, maybe the Big East and the ACC should merge together. I don't know how realistic that is. It should be so many teams. You'd have to kind of, I don't know how that would even work. But yeah, I mean, it was not a good year for the Big East. They just struggled in the non-conference, which was a big part of why their teams outside of St. John's were seated so low. And, you know, we've seen it in this tournament. I mean, the SEC has absolutely dominated this tournament. Big 10 and Big 12 have done very well. And, yeah, it's a big offseason for the Big East. I do think the house settlement, where there's going to be revenue sharing coming, will help the league because they don't have football to worry about. And that's going to help some schools that maybe don't have great NIL can, you know, use that money and bring in some better players. But yeah, I mean, the league not in a great spot right now. It was not a great tournament.
All right, last one before I let you go, Zach. As you look ahead to, you know, Sweet 16 and on into this tournament, what's the lead story or most interesting thing you'll be looking at over the next next couple weeks?
I don't think there's any doubt it's Duke and it's Cooper Flagg. You know, there's no Cinderella, which is, to me, is bad for the sport. Mm-hmm. It's all power conference teams, which is not good for the sport. Everyone loves the underdog story. But I think it's Duke and Cooper Flagg. We haven't seen a team with freshmen win at all in a decade, which was Duke in 2015. And the thing that's so impressive is they have a lot of freshmen, and they're really good defensively. You usually don't see that with freshmen. Mm-hmm. And Flagg is terrific. Knuppel is terrific. They were great today. I think they're going to win it all. And Cooper Flagg, he's a generational prospect. He's going to be the number one pick in the draft. So, you know, I think they're in Newark for the East Regional. I know they're going to have to play Arizona, who they played already this year. So I don't think that's easy. Then they could get Alabama in the Elite Eight. That won't be easy. All the number one seeds are still alive, so they're going to get tested here. but I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, Duke is the number one, number two, and number three storyline of this NCAA tournament. Otherwise, to me, there's not a lot of interesting stories, really. I mean, maybe Kelvin Sampson winning, you know, getting Houston back to the Final Four. But yeah, at one point early at Duke game, when Baylor was playing her shot for shot for the first 10 minutes, I'm thinking, man, the NCAA tournament loses Duke. I mean, man, that's going to be bad.
Yeah.
Like, they need the NCAA tournament. They need Duke in the Final Four. Because Duke is the one story that's really interesting. You know, obviously they have the Coach Shire who took over for Coach K and has done a good job. Like, Duke is the story of this tournament. I don't really see another second story.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I had written down in my notes, I gave that as an open-ended, but I had written down in my notes, Duke dominance. Are they looking like they would be like what we saw UConn do, where, you know, it's not just winning, but you're winning by big margins and just dominating teams?
I don't think they're just going to dominate, because I just think there are more really good teams this year. I think Houston is really, really, really good, and I think Houston could give them a very good game. We all know Auburn's had a great year. There are other teams.
I think Florida. I personally picked Duke, Florida in the final game, and I think if they end up having to face Houston and then Florida, to win it all, those are two very good teams.
Yeah, Florida, we worried me a little. I was not impressed today. Now you give UConn a lot of credit for that, but I was not blown away by Florida. I think they'll get through Maryland, and you would think they'll get to the Final Four. Texas Tech or Arkansas, they probably would beat, but did not. I'll tell you, I think the team that can give Duke the biggest problem is Houston, because they're amazing defensively. They can make threes, which has been an issue for them in the past years. I picked Duke, Florida, but I think Houston might. I think Houston has a chance to mess that up.
Okay, well, we'll see, but yeah, I agree with you. Cooper Flagg as the number one overall pick, and Duke and all of that is, I think, what we'll be watching for, and it has been just an underwhelming year so far for the tournament, not as exciting or compelling in terms of storylines as past years. Anyway, Zach Braziller from the New York Post. Zach, appreciate the time, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Of course. Thank you.